Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You're listening to Working, the podcast about what people do all day. I'm Jacob Brogan. For this season of Working, we left the East Coast behind and flew to Detroit. We're speaking with eight people who are drawing on the city's complex history as they work to create its future. For this episode, we were hoping to get a sense of Detroit's city government. To that end, we sat down with Alexis Wiley, who serves as chief of staff to Detroit's mayor. Wiley, who was a local television reporter until a few years ago, talks to us about the details of her job today and gets into the nitty-gritty of day-to-day scheduling in a role where you have to be on basically all of the time. She also discusses the challenges of some of the systemic problems that Detroit faces, including intergenerational poverty and land distribution. Then, in a Slate Plus Extra, Wiley tells us about her work on Detroit's Project Greenlight, an effort to install police cameras outside of businesses around the city. If you're a member, enjoy bonus segments and interview transcripts from Working, plus other great podcast exclusives. Start your 2-week free trial at slate.com/workingplus. What is your name and what do you do?
My name's Alexis Wiley, and I am chief of staff for Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan.
So what does that mean? Where do you fit into like an organizational chart of the mayoral office here?
So I am essentially second in command, along with a few other people who are on the same level, but I'm number two, essentially, in the mayor's office for the mayor.
Detroit population, something like 750,000?
No, we're at like 677.
677, okay. Much more exact than my numbers
there.
Yeah,
we track that very closely.
I would imagine. So what is the mayor's office doing in a city of this size? I mean, what are you overseeing?
The way the mayor explained the job when he hired me, because I came into this role in a really non-traditional way. I was a reporter for 3.5 years at the local Fox affiliate here, and he hired me to be spokesperson in the administration. And I did that for 3 months, and then I was promoted to chief of staff in May. And when I joined in February of 14. And the way he explained the job was basically making sure that our external statements fit our internal actions. So when the mayor says that he wants to make something happen within the city, it's my job to make sure, and our team's job, really. I don't want to make it seem like it's really me. We have a team of people, but really in this role, the job is to make sure that all the pieces that are necessary are connecting, and we're all moving the ball forward to achieve the mayor's vision for the city of Detroit.
Can you give us an example of that, a statement that the mayor might make and where that would lead you and your team?
So an example of that was when the water department was under the control of the emergency manager and was coming under the control of the mayor, one of the things we knew we did not have was an assistance plan to help people who were in danger of shutoff, something that the city didn't have. And at the time, the emergency manager's team was very focused on the fiscal aspect of things, right? But the mayor was like, we've got to have a response to the human component of this. So my job was to basically pull all the pieces together and launch the city's first assistance program. Mm-hmm. And that required fundraising. That required first figuring out the subject matter experts and the people who worked in the water department, people who worked with people who were in need of assistance, the philanthropic community, and then coming together and coming up with a plan that would allow people to pay their bill regularly, because we know that's in order for the water system to function, it requires people to pay, but also create a way to help people make that happen, to help people pay.
How do you keep everything straight if there are various projects in motion at any given time?
So you know what's interesting? You try to keep a lot of it in your head. But as you can see, I've got this board here, and I try to put the things that I'm thinking the most about that feel the hottest on my board. And sometimes it's super packed. Sometimes it's not, because things are moving forward. But if I need to be thinking about something, I need to see it up here. We also have a project management software that we use that lists a lot of different initiatives. To me, I'm better with kind of thinking, okay, what's hot? Write this on my board. I sit at my desk. I see it. And it's like this mental trigger that's like, oh, I need to make sure I check in on this. Or what's happening with the rollout of our next phase of our plan? What are we doing in regards to the building of this department?
Can you tell us a little bit about your office that we're in right now?
So I think anyone who comes into my office, it's clearly a working office, because I have so many papers on so many different topics, and typically it's a little bit messier than it is now, but my office is really like my space, right? So this used to be Kevin Orr's office, and the way it was set up before was the desk and the conference table were connected. So that essentially it was like you could sit at your desk and kind of lord over the other people that you're meeting with. Mm. And I don't know if he ever sat like that. I'm just saying that was how it was set up. And I purposely separated it so that there's a workspace for like collaboration next to
right angle to your
right,
desk.
Right, exactly. And it's not connected to my desk. I don't sit at my desk when I have meetings. We sit here at this table and we collaborate and come up with ideas. And then I have a glass board that is near my table, and it's where we write our ideas. And people will tell you I like to like just stand up and start like writing. I think I have a maybe I kind of like wanted to be a teacher at some point, so which is why I like the board and the markers. And then when I first moved in, I felt like it was so sterile, and I came in on a weekend and painted the wall.
The navy
blue. Mm-hmm. I painted it navy accent wall, actually, with my boyfriend at the time, who's no longer my boyfriend, but that was one of the good things that came out of that relationship. he got this wall done, and he did a very, very, very good job at it.
Nicely painted.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, one of the best things about it is there's a really cool view of the water and the riverfront and, you know, and Canada, right? So I feel like
Canada?
That's Canada right there.
Oh my God.
Windsor. So you get a chance to kind of see, like, this is an international city right across from Canada with a beautiful river walk that, you know, we've been really intentional on making sure that it remained public and that we incentivize real public usage of our beautiful spaces. So I love it. And then you see right on towards the just a little east, you can see the Renaissance Center, which is GM headquarters, right? And tons of other companies are there. So it's an interesting position to kind of remind you of, or it reminds me rather, of the importance of our city and the importance of the work that we're doing every single day.
Over in your window, there's what looks to be a Frida Kahlo doll popping out of a flower pot.
Okay, so that's so funny. Okay, so the Frida Kahlo doll, I really like Frida Kahlo, and I went to this exhibit when there was the DIA exhibit on Frida.
The Detroit Institute of Arts?
Yes, yes. And I got the Frida doll. I'm not sure why I put her in the pot, but it feels like it works.
She looks like she's popping up to say hello.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of ridiculous, but it also, like, you know, I'm not necessarily a designer, but she seems to have found her space.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel good about that one. The next to her is a picture of me and my sister, who lives in L.A., who's, like, one of my best friends. And it's my birthday party, my 30th birthday, which was a few years ago. But it was my birthday party. Then I randomly have a picture. I'm going to go get that. Can I go get it for you? Okay. So I have this random picture. This picture is me when I was a reporter interviewing the mayor in his 2013 campaign. I had no clue what was going to happen. I had no clue where I was going to go or whether he was going to win. Had no access that anybody else had. But when I came into the office, there was this, like, we had these, like, these picture frames that were stuffed in a closet. And randomly, that picture was in it. And I was like, how crazy. It reminds me of how much can change with the blink of an eye. And who would have known that back in 2013, when I was the reporter interviewing the guy running for mayor, that I would become his chief of staff.
You're listening to Alexis Wiley, chief of staff to the Detroit mayor. After this brief break, she tells us about what it was like to take on a managerial role as she joined the mayor's office.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What are your daily responsibilities? I mean, it sounds like from week to day to day, week to week, I imagine that it's going to fluctuate a lot. But Absolutely. Are there certain things that you find you're doing every day or almost every day?
So, yeah, I mean, I think so being chief of staff is a job where you often go from issue to issue that requires your attention, while at the same time trying to keep an eye on the other ongoing initiatives that we're trying to move forward, right? So on a day-to-day basis, we start every week going through scheduling, which is where we go through the mayor's full calendar to see who's he meeting with, what media is he doing, does he have everything he needs to be prepared? That's like one of the first things we do. It's actually one of the most, I would say scheduling is one of the most important and the toughest jobs in government to me. I mean, because, and especially really working with the principal, with the mayor, so... our scheduler, Samantha Talbot, does a fantastic job, but we all come together to make sure that all the key group execs have access to his calendar and know what they need to be providing to make sure that the mayor's prepared and he has everything he needs. Because, you know, the one thing you can't get back is time, so we have to make sure that his time is being used in the best way.
Is there a briefing book that you put together every day?
Samantha puts together it's funny, the mayor is not a big fan of briefing books because things change so much. The book is worthless by the end of the day when you first like put it together. But we all have calendars on our phone, and he really like we make sure that all his details are there. He's got everything he needs right there at his fingertips. And if he needs something else, he can ask somebody. So Samantha is really the keeper of that. And then part of my job is to make sure that I've gone through the calendar to see, okay, do we have all the different pieces there? And it can be difficult because so much fluctuates throughout the day. The mayor's really a hands-on mayor, so he
he will make the calls he needs to make to make sure that, that things are moving forward and that he has every detail on the key things we're working on. So scheduling's one piece. I am constantly talking to communications. Communications is probably, I mean, every day there's a media request that comes in or something that we're doing where we've got to be pushing our message, but at the same time responding to reporters because we want to make sure that we're responsive because that's a key way that people, especially people in our community, stay on top of what's happening within their government.
Your own background is in media. You are a reporter. Does that help when you're handling media requests?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been invaluable because I think, you know, I know how pressed for time reporters are. It's all about making sure that you can hit deadlines and we have to be moving just as quickly as they are. Mm-hmm. So it has been really helpful for me. And I would say that I probably spend maybe 50% of my time focused on communications specifically.
So even if you left that communications job, you're absolutely still in that role to some extent.
Well, and I came up to or this role to through the, right. the communications department and really kind of built it out to what it is now. But I think that when you're in communications, and I think as journalists, you see the world differently, and you're really taught to see the world through the eyes of an average person. And for me, that's been invaluable because, you know, in government, there's so much stuff that like has to happen, and there's the bureaucracy, and you've got contracts, you've got all these different, you know, different pieces. But it helps to be able to kind of, you know, take a moment to step back and just kind of think, okay, why are we really doing this? And that's because we've got to make sure that we're always connected to what's going to impact our community and what people will care about most. The mayor is fantastic at doing that. But I think having a background in communications, and not even communications, in journalism, as a journalist, you have to understand how people think about something, what they care about at any given moment, and how you can best give voice to it. And I think those skills have been invaluable to me in this role.
Was it easy for you to shift into that kind of managerial role?
You know, I think it wasn't easy. I think I have a personality for it. The way the mayor tells the story of how I got into this role. He said I was bossy. I take issue with that. I don't think I'm necessarily bossy, but we had a situation where one of our former fire commissioner was dealing with an issue, and it was actually it came to me through the media, you know, bringing it to my attention, and I came up with a solution, and I shared it with the mayor, and he was like, "That's perfect," and he was like, "That's what, you know, chief of staff should be doing, is coming up with solutions to the problems that we face on a day-to-day basis." So that skill has helped me. But I think for you to grow as a manager, you have to become comfortable with it's not all about you. And the more that you can empower your team to go out and achieve the goals as outlined by the mayor, the better off we'll all be. There was a time where I had to personally do a lot. And now I think we've built out a team where you can let them come up with basically their roadmap of how we achieve the mayor's goals. And my job is really make sure we stay, you know, that we're staying focused on his goals and that we're actually achieving them. But at the same time, you don't want to stifle their creativity. You don't want to stifle their talent because you hired them for a reason. So I think one of the toughest parts about becoming a manager is learning how much you personally need to do and how much you should let your team do. And I met with, you know, when I first got into the role and I was, you know, learning, I met with a local exec in town, and he told me, he was like, basically giving other people jobs has never cost me a job. And that was because he was like, you know, so many people feel like you personally have to be doing all these different things to be valuable. But oftentimes that only leads to you being scattered, right? But if you are able to build a strong team and empower that team to accomplish goals and get things done, you can do so much more and you can think about different things. And it just, it's, that's how I've, watching my team, especially the communications department, watching them grow and watching them do things and come up with ideas that I had never even thought about and having them turn out to be awesome is probably the coolest thing for me. And it tells me how much I'm growing as a manager, because they're achieving, which means that we as a city are achieving.
Do you spend a lot of time checking in with your team?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does that happen in person, over email?
Texting. Mostly.
Really?
I mean, my phone blows up at all times, and uh-huh. I typically have like 5 or 6 text messages at any point with someone updating me with an issue or asking me a question or responding to a question that I've asked previously. So it's really how we, it's how we communicate.
Does that stress you out though?
Yeah. I mean, there are moments where you get stressed out.
Yeah. I mean, having that many people who are in one way or another laying claim to some of your time.
Yeah. I mean, my time is not necessarily my own most of the time, you know, because you have so many different things happening all over the city. At any given time, there can be multiple issues all going, and you have to figure out how to respond to each, whether it's, you know, a departmental issue that we're dealing with or something that's happening inside the office or a scheduling issue. This job is all about keeping the balls in the air and making sure that they don't drop, because again, for us to be successful as a city, we have to work really well as a team. Mm. And that's what we're really focused on doing.
What does that mean though for the shape of your days? I mean, presumably it's not like you get to turn on your phone at 9 and right. then turn it off at 5. I mean, if you're doing your business over your phone via text message, if some of the business that you're doing has to do with, I assume, urgent emergencies and other issues that are happening throughout the city, are you always on?
Yeah. I mean, that's the honest answer. I'm always on. I wake up at 5 and I go to the gym. But the first thing I do is I check my phone mm-hmm. to see if I got any text messages overnight. And then from probably 7 a.m., me and Dave Masteron, our deputy chief of staff, are texting about some issue. Not always heavy issues, but just like in touch. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have a text from John Roach, our director of media relations, and he's talking about something that's going to happen in the day or some inquiry that came in. Then I will get a text from a department that would say, hey, Alexis, heads up, this is going on. What do you think about this? Or this issue is heading up to council. Have you weighed in? Or, you know, what do you think about it? And then it just goes on. Or even somebody outside the mayor's office will reach out to me. Someone who is a you know, business leader, or oftentimes it's average people. Because when I was a reporter, everybody had my cell phone. Mm. And I never changed my number. I did that on purpose.
So you use your personal phone for...
Your
personal phone number.
Right. Because I didn't want to change my phone number that I had when I was out on the street, because that's part of how people connected with me, and that I was accessible. So now people will text me about issues they're having in their neighborhood. They'll text me about an event that they want the mayor to come to, which is something that... I get a lot of those, mm-hmm. but it's all about keeping everything moving. So oftentimes my day won't end till 7, 8 o'clock at night. And then it just goes on from there. So I think, and then I'm in bed by 10:30, and then you start it again. But I mean, you are kind of tethered to your phone. That's one piece of this that it's not, I mean, I don't know what I would do without my phone, because literally it keeps me connected to every single thing. And then throughout the day, I'm constantly checking news sites to see what are people talking about in the city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, did this story that we thought was a big deal, is it being treated as a big deal? Or the story that I would hope was not treated as a big deal, maybe it is. How do I respond? So I'm asking myself questions like that throughout the day. So you are always on. But I also think I kind of have a personality like that, because as a reporter, you're always on, right? I think as a reporter, I probably had more downtime, where like when you're done and your story's done, it's not like you have to kind of keep following it unless it's a really big story for you, right? But that in this job, you can't do that. You have to keep track of everything because it doesn't really go away. You know, and when you launch an initiative, it has to continue. You have to make sure it's working well. Departments are constantly working. But I think the best thing that we have is we've got a really great team of leaders who are committed to the city, who all work 24/7 and do whatever it takes to make sure that we're moving the city forward, but also are treating Detroit residents as our customers, right? Mm. I mean, I'm here to serve them and improve our city, right?
That's an interesting term, though, customer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To describe the citizens that you're working with and for. Why the business-like language?
You know, I like the term customer, and then I feel like people pay taxes, right? They pay for a service that we as a city are supposed to provide. We're supposed to provide the basics. We're supposed to make sure that lighting is working. We're supposed to make sure that trash is getting picked up. We're supposed to make sure that we're expanding city services. We're supposed to make sure we're offering opportunities. So in my head, it's this constant reminder that there is someone that I really do work for, and I am serving every single day. And we've been really intentional about making sure that that mindset moves through the departments as well, because there was a time when it wasn't necessarily the culture. But I think in a lot of our public-facing departments, we're working to change that. And I think we've seen some improvement.
If everyone in the city, every citizen is your customer, though, and if a lot of them have your cell phone number, as yeah. it sounds like is the case, there must be days and times when people are asking things of you or hoping for things that you can't provide.
Every single day. Every single day. There's always something that there's a lot I can do. There are certain things that we can't do or haven't gotten to, right? I think you do have to focus yourself around achieving certain goals, and as you knock them off, you get to more. So, I mean, I think it is a regular shifting target, and there are certain things where, you know, someone might come forward with a request or an idea and we end up doing it, or there's some way that we're already addressing it. But you do have to make sure that you're focused on your priorities. You can't get moved off center, because there are always going to be 8 million competing interests. Everyone's going to have their own idea, but it's all about making sure that we stay focused on the priorities that we feel will be the most impactful in our city.
You're listening to Alexis Wiley. In a moment, she talks about dealing with crises, including a police shooting that happened earlier this year, shortly before we recorded the episode that you're listening to now.
What's the best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day in everyday situations. But if that's not on the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. I've used apps in the past to learn new languages, but when I came across Babbel, I wondered if it could help me refresh my knowledge of a language I once spoke well, but was now a little bit or quite a lot rusty. I have to say, I was impressed. The advanced lessons were really useful, tips and idioms that can help with in-depth conversations on topics that I can actually imagine chatting about. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations, and the tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. What's more, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for working listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for working listeners, at babbel.com/working. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/working, spelled BABBEL.com/working. Rules and restrictions may apply.
How do your days change when some kind of crisis crops up? I mean, what are some of the kind of crises that you deal with in the mayor's office here?
God. The thing about this job, too, is, like, I think
the goal is to make things look seamless. Like, you rarely talk about your crises, sure, because publicly they should not feel like crises. They're crises for me in that I have to drop every single thing and figure it out. I mean, I think we have crises on a regular basis, but I think it's all about just management, right? So when I say crisis, I feel like, you know, a crisis is something that can't be fixed. Typically, it's something that's just a really hot issue that needs your attention right this moment, and you drop everything else and you focus your attention there. But you also have a team of people who are managing the other aspects of things that are not so hot, right? Mm-hmm. Or you just know that you can come back to it.
So last night there was a shooting you mentioned mm-hmm. to us earlier before we started.
Right.
What can you tell us a little about that?
So we had an officer, two officers were responding to a domestic violence call on Sunday night. And right as they got to the door where the call was, where they were responding, someone, it appears right now with the details we've got so far, that there was someone who saw them, who was unrelated to the incident, who was either in the building or nearby, who fired at the officers, shot one in the head, and the other officer killed the shooter. The officer is in critical condition. That I would describe that as that's a crisis, right? That's something that is, we all stop. Right. Everything stops.
What does that mean for your office?
It means that, I mean, the first thing we do is one, you know, we've got an amazing Chief Craig, who does a great job with the department. When he gets a notification like that, he drops everything and goes to the hospital. Mm. He calls the mayor on the way to the hospital and updates him. And we think, okay, what do we need to support this family? What are the details of this? What do we need to share publicly? And how do you do it in the best way to be respectful? Because while you have one person who's been injured, you have a whole police force and a community that are impacted. So how do we best support each other during this time? So the mayor, you know, we had to blow out his calendar this morning, and he went to the hospital. And what he does is before there's any media or anything, he sits down with the family. That's the first thing he does. He sits down with the officers. And then at 11 a.m., you know, John Roach, our director of media relations, went over to the hospital and was with him. And at 11 o'clock, they had a press update. And, you know, those are hard, because for the mayor, you know, he's someone, probably one of the most genuine people I know. And it's, you know, watching him on TV, seeing him do the press conference, seeing the chief, seeing the families, it hurts all of us. It hurts all of us. And, you know, the officer is not in good condition. They say his condition's deteriorating, right? Pretty soon, you know, I'm truly hopeful that he will pull through, and I'm praying like everybody else in the city. But we've been through this before. I mean, we've had seven officers who were like shot or killed within just a period of months. Hmm. When something like that happens, I mean, that's been tough to deal with. And the violence overall has been tough to deal with, right? I think we're doing a lot to try to drive it down, but it's interesting. I mean, I was this past Friday, I spoke at the Officer of the Year Award with the Detroit Police, sponsored by the Detroit Police Officers Association. And it focused on all the different officers in every district who just did so many amazing things to help people, to protect our community, put their lives on the line. And when something like this happens, it is a reminder of just how much they are putting out there, just how much their families are doing. That's one of those things that stops everything, changes how you're gonna move. And I think
you know, it's a really unfortunate, I would say, reality of the job is dealing with things like that or a heinous crime, something like, you know, and then having to talk about them, right? You know, you don't just get to, don't have to just watch them, or even when I was a reporter and you'd cover it, there was still a level of being able to detach in a way. But when you have to think through what's the response, and a response that caters, that not only addresses the needs of our residents, but also the police officers, the city employees, and the officer and his family. And the police department does a great job, and they're really focused on that now. I mean, at this moment, when I say now, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's probably one of the toughest parts.
Do incidents like that make it more difficult to focus on the more mundane everyday tasks that would normally fill your time?
It does. It does. But at the same time, I think we have a responsibility to be moving on all fronts, right? So you've got to be focused on the fire in front of you, but also moving the ball forward, right? Because I think if you're only stuck in crisis mode, you never actually progress. Mm. So I always think of the workday in two different tracks. Now, there's some that will totally derail everything, but the reason why you build a team of competent people is because you've got to be moving, firing on all fronts. So an example of that is, you know, while the mayor was at the the hospital with the officer's family and with our police chief and the command staff, and John Roach, our media relations director, was there. We also are thinking about relaunching the expansion of the Detroit Promise this afternoon, which is a program that makes it so that every kid who graduates, lives in the city of Detroit, graduates from a Detroit high school, gets community college for free, but then also an expansion of a program where kids who have certain GPA and ACT scores will get four-year in-state college for free. So we're announcing that the Kellogg Foundation is giving an additional $3.5 million to the Detroit Promise. We're doing that at the end of the day today. We just knocked down the old animal control site, which was the site of a lot of protests and was not a was really an antiquated building. Mm. We're knocking that down and incorporating it into a Riverside Park for Southwest Detroit, and it's going to be the home of a dog park, which shows you how our people have a great sense of humor. But yeah, I mean, you have to be moving forward as a city. You've got to constantly be moving.
One element of that, and you alluded to this earlier, is that Detroit historically, in the last few decades probably especially, has been a city with enormous levels of economic inequality, I think it's fair to say, and considerable poverty.
Right, and I would almost say not as much as the economic inequality, I would say that you have more poverty, more widespread poverty across the city. It's probably the more reality of what we're dealing with. I think now there are aspects where, you know, you've got the image of downtown, which oftentimes dominates the media landscape, right? But you still have the reality of widespread poverty across our city. Mm-hmm. So for us, we really are focused on really how do we interrupt the intergenerational poverty cycle, right? Mm-hmm. What do we have to do? And that really goes to really investing in our neighborhoods, increasing educational opportunities and workforce training and bringing jobs. So really that becomes the reality of who we are as a city, I think, is really, really guides our policy and our initiatives that we take when you look at what we're doing across our departments.
We, we've been talking to a lot of people in different lines of work, One of the folks that we've spoken with in this series is Urban Farmer, and he is working on about an acre, opinionated guy, and, mm-hmm. And his one of the things he was saying is that he wishes that the city would make it easier for people like him, people who are kind of trying to work from the ground up, literally, mm-hmm. in his case, mm-hmm. To acquire more property. Is that a kind of issue that you think about in this office?
Oh, yeah.
How to help people take advantage of?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest things the mayor did was transfer the vast majority of the city-owned property to the land bank, because the land bank could really has the ability to move faster in terms of getting people land. Mm. One thing that had been an unfortunate reality in this town was you had so many people across the city who were taking care of the vacant lot next door to them, mm-hmm. right? They had, they do all sorts of things, right? So you'll have one person who might use the lot as a playground. I know this one woman who lives on the east side, and she uses hers to teach Zumba classes. Like people do all sorts of cool things, community gardens, all sorts of things, right? But for the longest, it took forever to get through the city's bureaucracy for you to actually own the lot. So people mm-hmm. spent years maintaining the lot next door to their houses, and not knowing whether the city would sell it to somebody else, not knowing what
someone
was going to
build on it.
Somebody could build anything because you don't own it, right? So how do we, it's hard to make a real investment when you don't own it. Mm-hmm. So the mayor launched our side lot program, where the land bank now sells side lots to neighbors for $100. You come in, you pay your $100, make sure your taxes and everything good, and you can sign on the dotted line, it's yours. And we just passed a milestone of selling 7,000 side lots across the city. Because people have wanted to do this. It's all about, the city owns far too much land. We're not trying to be in the business of just holding on to land. We've got to get it back into the hands of people who use it, but also get it into the hands of people who will use it responsibly. Because another problem we've had and still have are people who buy properties and basically treat them like a lottery ticket and say, I'm not going to put any money into this. Meanwhile, the neighborhood continues to suffer around it. There's someone who's living next door. There's a business who's trying to operate who's now suffering because you think blight's okay because you've got your golden lottery ticket that you're waiting for the property value to go up. And you're going to sell it, right? We are focused on taking back that land and getting it to people who are going to be responsible with it.
Speaking purely as an outsider
totally.
to Detroit, when you hear about revitalization in the city, the same kind of names that show up, mm-hmm. Shinola, who we're speaking with tomorrow, and businesses of this nature, maybe also some of the large car companies and such, mm-hmm. Investing in the city in different ways. Are there efforts to drive other smaller, more local development?
Mm-hmm. One thing that the mayor was really, really focused on when he came into office was creating opportunities for small entrepreneurs. So he personally fundraised and worked with foundations and J.P. Morgan Chase to basically create ways for them for our Detroit entrepreneurs to gain access to capital. So we launched a program called Motor City Match, which is a program that connects entrepreneurs with properties in our neighborhoods so that they can open storefronts. We give out $500,000 every quarter. The vast majority of our winners are minorities and longtime Detroit residents and women. Who are really making investments in our neighborhood. That program's taken off. We've got the J.P. Morgan Entrepreneurs of Color Fund. I believe Kellogg is also a partner in that. But you've got the Entrepreneurs of Color Fund that's making loans to businesses who for a long time couldn't qualify for them because you've been in the city during the highs and the lows. So you're not a kid coming in here with a shiny, with a shiny credit score. You've got people who've been here when the customers weren't. So now, how do you make sure that they're positioned to take advantage of the resurgence, right? Or even make it so that we're having a true resurgence? Because the only way we can really be successful is if that success impacts and touches everyone.
We've spoken with some people here in Detroit who feel that the city government is most responsive to larger businesses, larger entities, more economically established entities generally, and that small organizations, not just smaller businesses, but maybe smaller nonprofits and other organizations that are more marginal, have a harder time expressing their own needs, finding their own space in cities. How do you respond to those kind of concerns when they come up?
You know, to be honest, I don't agree with them. I think, you know, our office, we spend, I would say, the vast majority of our time focused really on our neighborhoods. We're not thinking about the large corporation or the big business that's doing something because they're taking care of themselves. Where we're needed is our neighborhood. So we look at what's happening. You look at what we've done in terms of our investment in demolition. 11,000 houses down. We're now one of the fastest in the country. We're focused on impacting our communities. We're not thinking about big businesses in the city. I mean, I think we want to support them. We want to help them create jobs. We also want to help our smaller businesses create jobs. When you look at what we do with CDBG grant dollars going to nonprofits in our community, I think that's misplaced. It's a misplaced critique, but I've heard it. So I think there are people who are saying it, but I think when you look at what we're doing and what's happening across the city, I think it speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. And our commitment speaks for itself.
You have potentially hundreds of thousands of people making demands on your time. Mm-hmm. Not every day, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But you must hear requests that you can't honor, at least in the moment. Mm-hmm. What's it like to have people asking things of you that you, the mayor, the mayor's office, the city more generally, are not able to provide when that happens?
What's it like managing that?
Yeah.
You know, the mayor has a line where he says, one day, maybe in my next life, I can come back as a politician and will tell you what you want to hear, but I'll tell you what it is, right? I'll be honest with you. So I think because we've always approached the conversation with, I'll be honest with you, I think it goes over pretty well because, you know, we're not going to say, oh, yes, we'll do this when there's no intention of doing it, right? Mm. I think what most people want is honesty. They may not be happy with your answer, but they respect you for it. So I try to just approach it that way and hope that, you know, while you might be mad at me over one thing I can't do, there might be something else that I can do. I do often try to find a way where I can say, well, I can't do this, but there is something that we're doing here, and let me connect you with that person or something like that. But yeah, you deal with it all the time, and I feel like as long as you're honest, you can, you know, keep it moving.
Has doing this job changed the way that you move through and understand this city?
Absolutely. It's funny. I feel like I'm responsible for everything around me. Like you can't just like, I remember when I first got into this and, you know, I'd be driving down the street and I'd see a light that's out. And I'm like, oh gosh, that light's out. Somebody better fix that. I'm like, wait, that's somebody's me. I'm the one who has to make the call for that.
Do you?
So, yep, absolutely. So I'll be driving down the street. I mean, we have Improve Detroit, which is our app that basically gives people the power to report a variety of things from lights out to dumping to stuff like that. But I have I drive down the street and I stop and I take a picture and I text somebody. And I'm like, hey, this light's out. Just wanted to give you a heads up. I know you're, and typically the thing is when I do that, they're already working on it in the department. They already know about it. It's just me being like, hi, I just saw this. Just want you, just an FYI. And they just kind of keep, you know, and they always send me texts, thanks, Alexis, whatever. But you feel responsible for every single thing that's around you. And I sometimes feel like, you know, I feel like sometimes like, It is hard to relax a little bit, and I feel like it's easier to relax when I'm not in my city because I am not responsible for everything, right? And that is one big change in how you live and breathe in your city.
when you visit other cities, do you ever have the experience of, you know, thinking, oh man, we should be doing that? Or like, or do you ever feel like glee that you've got stuff together that they haven't figured out yet?
Yeah, I do. It's a little bit of both. I can say, I think we're pretty competitive because the mayor said—
You and other city managers?
Well,
or?
Well, no, I say me and like the mayor and like our team, oh,
okay.
Right? Like
yeah.
we are like—
You want to do it right.
Oh yeah, we like being the big kid on the yard. We like being the ones who are doing everything and knocking it out the park. And when we see something that somebody else is doing better, you know, we'll think, oh, that's a great idea. We need to figure out how to do this here. Or we'll be like, well, we were the first to do this, or, you know, glad we're doing it different. I mean, I think it's, you know, when you consider our goal, which is really growing the population of the city of Detroit, which is, you know, has to be accomplished on two fronts. From number one thing is keeping people who are here in the city, creating opportunities and making, we've got to make living in Detroit a competitive advantage, right? So we are constantly thinking about that. And then the other piece is making it an attractive place if you wanted to move here. But really, when you consider our overall goal of growing the population, we've got to keep people. So we're very competitive. I mean, that is one piece that of us about us that's kind of funny.
I love it. Sounds like part of your role, and correct me if this is not an accurate characterization, but it seems like part of your role with projects like these is to advocate for them, to get the word out or convince other people to get the word out in their own way.
Absolutely. I mean, that is a large part of what I do. Anything that generates, that requires buy-in from the public or requires really engagement is something that I oftentimes am tasked directly with working on. You know, when you guys called and said you wanted to do this, and I was thinking, you know, this is about working and it's about how I do my job. It was kind of tough because I feel like every day my job changes. Like, it's never the same. I mean, there's always, and it's very much dictated by what our priorities are, but also what's just happening in the world. It's really, really fluid, but very rewarding. And, you know, I feel honored to serve the mayor, but also serving the city. This is such an amazing place filled with just great, great people. I mean, I hope you get a chance to go, and people and communities across our city who are just so tight-knit, mm-hmm. and have had to really rely on themselves for so many years. And what we're trying to say is, look, now you've got a partner in your city government. We're here to those goals, those priorities you've set for yourself are the same goals we're setting as an administration. And our job is to make sure that we're in lockstep with you as we grow and move our city forward.
A lot of the ways that people end up taking advantage of some of the opportunities that are available in Detroit is that they wind up producing higher end things, luxury goods and so on. We're going to Pony Ride tomorrow, and a lot of, you know, Pony Ride, one of the businesses in that incubator sells $100 t-shirts. Is there ever any danger that the things Detroit is making today, the ways that Detroit is developing today, aren't aimed at the people of Detroit itself as it's been for the last few decades?
You know, I think Pony Ride to me is a very unique example in that That's a small part of what we
sure.
do, right?
Yeah, but I'm also thinking of Shinola businesses. Or even
Shinola,
some of the, which sells $900 watches.
Right, right. Or... No, I think it's a balancing act. You know, while you've got a Shinola that is producing, you know, $900 watches and bikes, you also have a company like Flexengate that's coming to the east side that's bringing about 700 jobs that are manufacturing jobs. They make the... I think they make auto parts, mm-hmm. and you got that kind of company. You got the Link Logistics company, which is also on the links on the west side. That's hired 200 Detroit residents. And one thing that I think is for me, I'm less focused on what you're making and more focused on the jobs you're creating. So a job is what matters. I don't necessarily, and I bet if you talk to the people who work at Shinola, regardless of the price of the watch they're making, they're probably pretty happy about their job, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what really moves cities forward. And I think
One of the biggest challenges that we as a city have faced is that so many people who live in the city are forced to work outside in the suburbs. And then you also have a high percentage of people in our city who don't have cars. So for me, what's most critical is, are you hiring local? Because we've got to make sure that we create local jobs.
Talking about working on working.
Yeah, exactly. Working on working.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks for coming to Detroit. Really, really appreciate it.
It's been our pleasure. We've learned a lot.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Working. I'm Jacob Brogan. I want to encourage you to check out Slate's XX Gabfest, a great bi-weekly podcast about feminism, gender, sex, politics, and more. It features some of my favorite people, including Hannah Rosen, Noreen Malone, and the great June Thomas. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about Working. Our email address is working@slate.com. I get all those messages in my own inbox, and I read them, and I do try to respond to them. They mean a lot to us, and they're helpful and important. You can also listen to past episodes at slate.com/working. Working is produced and edited by Mickey Capper.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.